Oniric. Festspiel bei Vincent Lauzon. Some marsh of a field near Weidweck, a few days after the Sommerhoch. My esteemed father, heartfelt greetings from your less than worthy son. I hope this letter finds you and my brothers well, and that no strange and exotic disease has rotted your testicles away. You may find the paper on which I write this a trifle moldy, but such are the burdens of a decommissioned soldier. My old standard-issue shield is my writing desk, and this Festspiel week has been a bit damp. I'm sure your readings have told you how the weather gets this far west of the Streng. I can only hope you find it in your soul to forgive this lapse in protocol. 6 months already since our good King Sev has seen fit to declare the war with the Schillernd over. His decree was only relayed to us on the front line, of course, read at least by a court messenger of some note, which is as it should be. His Majesty's duties in Orvald are, we can all agree, numerous and onerous. The bears of Eit will not hunt themselves. Indeed, what with you and Tamo and little Joost in the capital, I wouldn't be surprised to learn that you were made aware of the armistice a good 2 days before we were. Life is full of these amusing ironies. You with the delirious throng under the palast balcony, rejoicing at the royal words of peace, 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 while at the very same moment, I was trying to scream my squad back together to escape a Schillernd ambush, my captain gored to squealing death before my eyes, and me with my hand down a Schillernd scout's throat, his fangs gnashing at my arm and near slicing it off. You will be gratified to learn that this last act of mine in the war availed me a medal of sorts. A little bronze disc with Sev's august profile on one side and an improving motto on the other. It is tied to a small strip of red Kalyanish silk. One wears it pinned to one's vest, and very dashing it looks too. I never take it off. Strangely, it seems to annoy the punters whose trade suffered during the years of the war, but I'm not one to shy away from the frank exchanges of views that this little icebreaker tends to start with remarkable regularity. In addition, the end of the hostilities have left me with a month's wages, now sadly gone, my uniform, the aforementioned shield, a rather excellent sword, and a left hand whose last three fingers won't bend. Ah, those fingers. Not a problem for the fighter I now am, perhaps, but for the musician I used to be, longed to become, and hoped to be again, a somewhat sad predicament. You remember how I used to play the laute, I am sure. My life, that instrument was, as you know. My old teacher Amsel used to crow about my talent, you remember? How he would embarrass me with his glowing tributes. This boy, he would say. This boy. Such finesse, such subtlety in the volumes, such mystical understanding of the tempi, the finest student he had ever taught. But he is a player such as is found once in a generation, I seem to recall him protesting on the very day you chased him out of the house and marched me to the Royal Recruitment Office. Was that really 6 years ago? I turned 19 in the spring, so it must be. I don't suppose you've changed all that much since I saw you last. You were signing the waiver to let me enlist before the minimum age, you'll recall. But I dare say these days I'd make you blench a bit if you met me past sunset on the docks of Roughspun. I'm a seasoned soldier in body and instincts now, if not necessarily in nature. I have bought a new laute. Quite a fine one, too. A soulful instrument, made of spruce and rosewood. Lovely lacquer job. The bridge is fashioned out of oak, which, as you can imagine, is why it was so expensive. That is where most of my demobilization money went, truth be told. One can't always be reasonable. In any case, a beautiful piece, almost as good as the one you threw into the fire. It was while trying to find some way of using my shiny new toy to generate some income that I found myself here in Weitweg for Festspiel Week. It occurs to me that you may well not have heard of the Weitweg Festspiel, but it's been all the talk in the West for a few months now. It is? Was, of course. It's behind us now. But I'm rather convinced it'll be back next year. A music festival of sorts, dedicated to peace and love and universal harmony and possibly to agriculture, and organized by a kind of fraternity of several religious cults. I couldn't give you a full list, I've never been much of a temple grazer, but I'm pretty sure the placards mentioned the followers of Nidrin, the faithful of Urteil, and the flock of Severana, as well as a host of other groupuscules in smaller letters. I met many of their representatives during the week, but never bothered to learn to tell one breed from the other. And I got my three small gigs at the Festspiel through a resolutely secular booking agent. The Weitweg Festspiel, the name notwithstanding, was not actually held in Weitweg. Chiefly because the local lordlings were not at all keen on seeing thousands of peasants, as well as a good proportion of the rebellious sons and daughters of the regional aristocracy, converge on their little city, all hopped up on Black Lotus, commingling and singing and chanting and, frankly, forgive my gamish, fucking one another left, right, backwards, and sideways. For an entire week. No windfall of tourist money is worth the aggravation, they groused, and one can sympathize with their view. In any case, most of the people who did show up were poor as the mud the festival eventually took place in, so it's not even as though Weitweg would have benefited greatly from the event. In the end, a wealthy local farmer decided to stick it to the nobs and let the organizing committee have use of about 15 acres of land some 30 leagues outside of the city. There were screams of outrage in Weitweg, as you can imagine, but nothing much could be done to prevent it. Amusingly, the farmer did manage to make quite a bit of money from the venture by being the only one on site allowed to sell eggs and milk and ale to thirsty and hungry attendees. I met my booking agent in a Weitweg inn, a grotty little place off the main street called, in a typically rural display of self-deception, the Shining Beacon. I auditioned, after a fashion, by buying the man a mug of ale and playing for him for as long as it took him to drink it. As both his hands tended to disappear under the skirts of a giggling, jiggling lass, that beer lasted longer than I would have liked. Do you have any idea, dear father, what agony it is to play the laute with a crippled hand on the frets? Not that it hurts as such, I've lost most feeling in my deadened three fingers, but I used to play so damned well. And now it's as though I'm two men in one body, a true musician and a potterer. I can pick as proficiently as I ever did with my right hand, but my left hand can't follow suit. It's all I can do to hold simple chords down. I had to be careful to choose tunes that let one be a dextral virtuoso and a sinistral amateur at the same time. Not too many songs fit the bill, I can tell you that with some confidence. Inger, the Miller's Daughter, is no problem, and the Lay of Cahor works well enough in a simplified arrangement, and I think I managed a passable City of New Orkin. But at some point, I'm going to have to compose my own pieces to have a repertoire large enough to play the same venue twice. Perhaps it was the ale, or perhaps it's just that so far from Orvald, the level of talent is comparatively lower. But after he had waved his obliging girl away with instructions to wait for him upstairs and belched his appreciation for the beer, the agent clapped me on the shoulder and booked me for 3 one-hour sets on the Einheit stage, a smaller space some ways away from the main stage, near, he told me, a pond. The idea for this festival, you see, was that several acts would perform at the same time at different spots on the site, and the people could wander merrily from one performer to the other, according to taste, inclination, or whim. A very modern, carefree notion, quite at odds with the military turn my mind has acquired over the years, but there you are. My first set was on the following day, at 2 in the afternoon. I stowed my lauta away in its bag, took the purse he gave me as an advance, thanked him politely, and sat myself at the bar. And suddenly, right beside me, wearing the red sash of the Schillernd 3rd Marsh Army over his short-sleeved shirt, right the fuck beside me, sat a Schillernd. I'd suspected for months that my cider-addled sot of a wizard adjutant had done a shoddy job of breaking my royal conditioning, and I was proved right at that moment, because instead of sneering under my breath and lowering my nose into my drink as I should have done, what I did was, I screamed my old squad's battle cry, leapt back, sending my stool crashing to the floor, unsheathed my sword, and bloody well rushed that Schillernd. Immediately he drew his head in to protect his throat membranes. That's the only part of themselves that they keep armored on the battlefield, but he was not wearing a gorget now for some reason, and crossed his arms over his chest, elbow horns glinting in the lantern's light. "Boys, boys, we're all friends together now!" I heard someone screech. Probably the innkeep. Even though I fought to pull back my own stroke, he had to block it. Had he been human, I would have taken his arm right off. But of course, Schillernd hide is a bitch to cut, so my blade just scraped aside with a grinding noise that took me right back to the plains of Idyll. Well, the plains of Idyll are not a place I care to be taken back to, if it's all the same to you, so I threw my sword down with a cry of "Oirendo!" about half a second before he would have buried his left knee horn into my gut. As it was, he stood there hesitantly, balancing on one leg, and waited for me to spread my hands apart and away from my body before letting his naturally beweaponed left leg thud back to the floor. He kept his neck well hidden in his leathery folds as he eyed me balefully. "My apologies," I said, reddening. "Conditioning still mildly operating, it seems." The innkeep hovered a few feet away, sweat on his jowls. The other patrons pretended nothing had happened. The Schillernd gave me a hint of a smile and motioned for the innkeep to leave us and no harm done. As far as he was concerned, I may well have been lying, but at least he recognized a fellow soldier. His eyes had latched onto my combat medal for a fleeting moment before settling back on my face. "You should make an appointment with an army sorcerer," he said in perfect Imrish, of course. "At some point, an improperly broken conditioning will land you a place atop a gibbet." His voice went through me, and I felt the hairs on my arms prick up. I knew the feeling well. It played havoc with your will to fight during a battle, that sound. Made you feel as though trying to kill what was making it was, to use temple language, a sin. Before the Schillernd, a man faces two enemies. The Schillernd, and one's own heart, with its natural love of beauty. Now I say that, but today, it was a little different. Today there was something off about it as well. Sure, it was beautiful, as all Schillernd voices are, but to my ear, there was something faintly wrong with it. A slight fuzziness and unusual sizzling at the back of the normally pure sound. It was very subtle, very faint. You wouldn't have noticed it, I suppose, but I've heard a lot of Schillernd chatter in the last 4 years. The bastards never shut up when they fight, and I have a good ear. In any case, I elected to remain civil and made no mention of it. I nodded sheepishly. "May I pick my sword up, Ceviche?" I asked. He considered the request for a second, then bowed at the waist in gallant assent. Your accent in Cordy's is excellent, he complimented me. The best I have yet heard. I think that is why I didn't run you through when you yielded. I laughed and slid my sword back in its scabbard. That and the peace treaty, of course, I answered in my best Cordese, shocking the hell out of him. All friends together now and all that. It took him a moment to come up with a cogent retort. I thought you had just memorized a few useful phrases like most of your people, he exclaimed in his own language. Not many outside of the Bonito can actually speak Cordese. The Bonito is what the Schillernd called themselves, if you didn't know, Father. It means beautiful. And why not? The Bonito's linguistic prowess is well known and rightfully feted, but there are humans born with some talent for languages, I said, keeping my tone playful and modest. It was useful during raids, being able to understand the instructions flying between your soldiers and never one of you suspecting that a human could be following your conversations. Saved a few of my comrades' lives. You didn't quite know how to respond to that, and being, as it were, in enemy territory, he chose to take it as virile banter between ex-men-at-arms and chuckled. To be honest, I'm not quite sure how I meant it myself. You would be surprised at how easy it is for old soldiers to become friends in a minute, regardless of past or present allegiance. At that moment, if you can believe it, I felt closer to this leathern monster than I did to the booking agent or, indeed, to family members long out of sight. With respect. I am glad to hear it, he said. And I was again struck by the unusual quality of his voice, by the distant hints of insects buzzing almost too softly to be heard. Well, as you yourself noted, this is all behind us now. Let me simply congratulate you again on your command of my language. And also, he added pleasantly, for your musical gift. I heard you play just now. Very charming. Now it was my turn to bow, but his next words shocked me upright again. I am here for the festival too. I will sing on the Frieda stage tomorrow at sundown. I stifled a gasp. The idea of a Schillernd singing for an audience of humans went against all I knew of that Western race. I hope you can attend. A rare opportunity indeed, I stammered. Before adding with some professional jealousy, I am not made of stone, for fuck's sake. Which is why they booked you on the main stage, I expect. I would not miss it. He nodded, apparently gratified. His shoulders finally relaxed, and his head rose toward the ceiling by about 4 inches, as his neck extended to its normal height, exposing the delicate throat membranes that striated the skin. I must leave now, he said, and the membranes vibrated, swirling with the beautiful iridescent colors that have given the Schillernd their name. He saluted and walked away. I sat back at the bar. Just before he passed the door, he turned back toward me and called out, still in Cordese, so that we might as well have been alone in the room. It's a pity about your hand. But then, people so rarely listen, do they? Then he was gone. Cheeky bastard. Well, I had no horse, and the Festspiel site was, as I say, some 30 leagues away, but someone on the organizing committee had thought things through and was making his or her god proud. There were 6 carriages making the journey back and forth between the farmlands and the town all day, and as one of the artists, I was allowed to ride them whenever I felt like it for the duration of the festival. I could have spent the night at the inn, but it was a fine evening, and I didn't mind sleeping outside. During the war, I slept in fields on more than one patrol, and not always when the weather was clement either. As a rule, soldiers are used to fenced camps and whatnot, but more often than not, a squad on a reconnoiter will have to rough it a bit. It's made me the man I am today. So why waste good money on a lumpy mattress, I thought. The site where the Festspiel took place was fields and a lake, ponds and clumps of trees, and little tents and blankets on the ground and fire pits and people. So many people indeed, most looking dazed and somewhat outside of the world, but not unhappy. No, not unhappy. By the time I found a level spot to crash, I'd been kissed by 5 women and 1 man. Back home I'd have slain him for the liberty, but I've been in the army. We keep a hidebound, conventional image, we squaddies, but we're actually quite worldly. Have to be, what with a man's normal appetites and the months away from decent womenfolk. All a bit foreign to you, Father, I suppose, but by the Vara I can tell you that when the urge is strong enough, a clean man who's been taking care of himself is infinitely more appealing than some of the ladies of dubious virtue I've rubbed privates with. Of the night, I will only say that I reckon there will be a wave of births at the end of May in and around Weidweg, and that it is not inconceivable that one of those will be an unknown grandchild of yours, Father. I rose at around 9 on the morrow, which is slothfully late for me, and walked around the fields of the Festspiel, drinking in the sights. The sun was warm and yellow, and made the tree leaves glitter as though they were limned with gold. The snowy tips of the Grenze, far to the west, were of that pale gray that melts into the sky and makes it difficult to tell where mountains end and clouds begin. During the war, I hated the sight of those fucking mountains, but today they looked properly awesome. The grass about me was already trampled almost to mud by the milling multitudes of men and women and children and dogs and goats, established families and families in the making, old people and youngsters. There was laughter and screams and bleats, and the smell of cooking and the smell of shit. Naked kids ran along invisible ley lines and dangled from every tree branch, and mothers gave the suck to babes, and fathers walked about in a daze, faintly ineffectual, as is their wont. Everybody was a bit frumpy, a bit dirty, a bit lost, but by the Vara, most everybody smiled. The Einheit stage was indeed by a pond. It was just in front of a pond, in fact, and stood between the marshy water and the audience. One could have fished from the wings, and I don't suppose nobody tried it at least once during the week. In any case, my feet got wet while I reached the ladder to the stage on all 3 of my sets. The boards were rough and looked as though they would do their best to stick a splinter up my big toe the minute I'd look away. The stage itself would adequately accommodate a 6-piece band, I reckon, so it was not exactly expansive, but certainly comfortable for a lone performer. I'm sure the question is burning your lips. How did your first set go, my son? I'm glad you asked. I was ridiculously nervous, not having played before a paying audience since... Well, I never did play before a paying audience, that is true, but back in your house, I did perform what amounted to actual concerts under the tutelage of my dear lost Amsel. I seem to remember that you found some pleasure at the time in hearing your son play as well as any 12-year-old can. I like to remember it that way, in any case. I think the audience would tell you that my set went beautifully. Certainly, everyone gave every indication of enjoying themselves, clapping rapturously when I finished a piece, singing along in raucous tones when they knew the tune, or simply believed they did, and calling out requests between numbers. They even remained good-natured before my repeated protestations that no, I didn't know that one, sorry. I hate requests so much. Of course I lied, I know them all, but my hand prevents me from playing so many of them that it's a wonder they didn't rush the stage and topple it into the pond in an effort to drown me. The songs I did play, they loved. Even the ones I played twice. Now my own opinion of my first set, if I may be candid, is that it was crap. Audiences are so bloody nice. Except when they're not, of course. And they have no inkling of the depth of hatred that performers have for them. Perhaps I'm not explaining this clearly. I mean that people don't have the sophistication necessary to appreciate, to understand, to apprehend, if you will, a piece of music being played for them. They do not have the heart or the intellect to tell a mediocre musician from a competent one, or indeed from a truly great one. So, by and large, they clap at anything. I find beer deadens the pain. I stepped off the stage and sloshed despondently away, trying to smile at the people smiling at me. I was in a gloomy sort of a mood, Father, I don't mind admitting. I can be honest with you. I walked back to the spot where I'd slept, found it otherwise occupied, looked for another one. I ate some cheese a toothless girl was kind enough to share with me, and practiced for a quarter of an hour as she listened. Then I practiced some more on my own, because practicing, in sharp contrast to rehearsing, is no fun to listen to. I made my way to the Frieda stage with a good 2 hours to spare. The place was already packed, but I found a good, close spot. People are always polite to an ex-soldier when he growls. There was a succession of fine acts on that stage as the sun sank behind the Grenze, Father, and I listened with genuine pleasure. Some good voices, one or two pipers with real vim, and even a few adequate lautists whom I resented quietly. After a while, the stagehands lit the torches around the stage. There were a lot of them, and they blazed warm and gold in the gloaming. Children began to drift off to sleep in parents' arms or wrapped in furs and blankets. Bread and cheese and ale was passed around freely, with good grace and many a blessing to all the gods and goddesses worshipped by the worlds. Then my Schillernd walked to the edge of the stage, and he was like a comet come resting on Erde. He wore the finest silks I'd seen in years, the kind of togs I used to wear as a child, the kind you probably still do, Father, but which are in scarce supply in the trenches. They flowed and rustled and shimmered with blues, greens, and purples, with ribbons of red and tongues of yellow. Even in the ruddy glow of the flames, all these colors leapt out at you and made you feel as though you'd been slapped in the eyeballs with a bag of marbles. Now you might dismiss the sight as ridiculous, akin to putting a dress on a cow, but I tell you, Father, we all gasped as he exploded into view, and not because we thought he looked silly either. His golden eyes rested on us with a relaxed benevolence, which was given just that little bit of an edge by the glistening ridge of his eyebrow horns. Looking at him then, I fully understood the truth of the Schillernd's name for themselves. He threw his head back and extended his neck to its fullest, and the scintillating waves of color along his throat membranes made his clothes look beige. And then he sang, and all the colors in the worlds came back. You've never heard a Schillernd sing, Father, and there's no way I can explain what it's like in a letter. No matter what a neat phrase I can turn now and again. Interestingly, when he began, I realized that I hadn't heard a Schillernd sing before either. Not really, regardless of my 4 years trying to break through the wall of beauty they constantly throw at you on the battlefield. That fucking battering of magnificent, mellifluous chatter they keep up all the time. Turns out that's nothing. When a Schillernd actually sings, you have to remember to breathe. The thing about it is, they use their throat membranes to create the sound, and they can generate one note per set of membranes. They have 3 sets. Schillernd sing in chords. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're probably completely unimpressed as you read this, Father, and you can have no idea how fucking angry that makes me. One Benito can sing like 3 humans together, in tones clear and pure as a mountain stream. I'm not quite sure how long he sang. I sat and I listened, and I laughed and I wept. We all did. There is no way on Erda, Father, that I will ever be able to lift my sword against one of them again. If the king ever takes it into his head to wage war against the Shillernd once more, I will not be able to answer the royal summons. No musician ever could. And here's another thing. I was, in all probability, the only one in that audience who could understand the words he was singing. I would have expected prayers, or high poems, or courtship rituals, or something equally profound. But he sang children's songs for as long as he stood on that stage. He looked very solemn and earnest up there. Oh yes, he appeared very wise and in deep communion with the universe, but he sang about learning the days of the week, and counting to 10, and tying your boots, and sheep being lost in the forest, and fish wondering about life outside of the sea. Oh, he knew I was listening. He knew I was listening, the bastard, and he was having a grand old time making this into a big joke and letting me in on it. And it was still the most beautiful concert I've ever attended. Mind you, it was not perfect, because that weird defect in his voice was still there. Most people would not have heard it, but it was glaring to me. It was only one of the notes in his chords at any one time. I was uniquely positioned to hear it, of course. Another musician would have heard it, but could not have known that this was not how the Shillernd are supposed to sound. Another soldier would have heard Shillernd voices before, but would not have been able to hear the difference. I was both, and I could hear it as well as he'd heard how my hand wouldn't let me play properly. There was another band after his set, but I couldn't be arsed. I pitied the poor sods who had to follow that. I walked away without looking back. I bought some ale and wandered around until I found a relatively deserted clump of apple trees. I sat down because, frankly, my legs wouldn't carry me anymore. Not that I was particularly tired. You know what I felt like doing, Father? I felt like smashing my lauta to kindling. When you gave in to your wife after my mother died and pushed me so gently into the arms of the military, I was a little upset. When you made it clear that it would be all right by you if I never made it back from one campaign or another, I was somewhat pained. I'm man enough to admit this, but these things never made me feel worthless. By the Vara, I only had to look at your lady's sons, my brothers, useless and vain hogs that they were, to be more than comfortable with my own worth. I'm sure Jost and Tamo grew up into fine, sturdy members of the household, of course. I only used their names as an example. But the beauty of that Shillernd's voice, Father. Broken and full of contempt, though it was, that voice made me feel too small to care. Everybody else in that audience felt uplifted, I'm sure. Not me. Not me. I drank. He found me a couple of hours later and sat down beside me. He wore a dark, coarse robe with a large cowl that hid his features. "How did you like it?" he asked softly, in Cordes. I belched. "What's the matter with your voice?" I shot back in Imrish, angry at everything and too drunk to play nice. He chortled. "Fair enough," he said, switching to our language. He drew back the cowl and extended his neck. Turning toward the light of a lamp, he pointed at the second membrane on the right side of his throat. "Can you see?" he asked. "Come. Look well." I almost told him to go fuck himself, but something honest in his tone made me swallow back the oath. With a groan, I rolled onto my hands and knees to move closer, and squinted. There was a jagged line across the colored skin, a pale scar that broke the perfection of the glittering waves of flesh. "I caught a dagger in there last year," he said. "It slipped right under my gorget, don't ask me how. The field surgeon did all he could. Then my family's personal physician. Later, two different wizards. Last month, I even saw a human sorcerer. As bad as it is now, you should have heard me 6 months ago." He shuddered. "I think this is as good as it will ever get." I nodded, sadly. "Shit," I said. I thought of what I knew of Shillern'd society and how most of their existence was mediated through their singing. "That's gotta screw up your prospects a bit." "I will probably never get married," he sighed. "Everybody is very nice, telling me that it doesn't change who I am inside, but it's not true. The Bonito don't live in that sort of a world."
"Is that why you're here?"
He shrugged. "Humans seem to think they've never heard anything more beautiful than my voice. That feels good. They pay well, too. I thought that maybe, if I made enough of a name for myself and came back a rich homem, I might be able to buy myself a bride among the more tone-deaf of my people."
"Good luck with that," I smiled.
"I'd offer you some ale to toast that pledge, but I'm afraid it's already all in my gut."
My smile melted as I thought back on his performance.
"Did you enjoy making fools of all those people? They wept with the beauty of it, you know. They thought you were lifting them to the god world."
He shifted in his seat, then pulled the cowl back over his face.
"I was in a quandary," he said softly. "Had I thought that no one in the audience could understand Cordis, I would have gone with my original program. Sacred chants, histories, religious epics. But I knew you spoke my language so well, and I felt embarrassed. I was taught from an early age that High Bonito lore is for Bonito ears only. I was singing about Colin Bears bringing pies to grandmothers because of you." "Right, so this was my fault, was it?"
He darkled.
"I would not have put it quite so baldly. Fuck off," I spat in Cordis.
He recoiled and glared at me, his throat membranes puffing and rippling.
I shrugged. His head dipped and disappeared further into the cowl. We remained silent for some minutes.
Then his voice emerged from the depths of the dark cloth. It was surprisingly timid.
"Could you restring your instrument the other way round?" he asked, and I thought I'd misheard because of the ale. "Your lauter," he insisted, noting my bewilderment. "Could you take the strings off and put them back on? Well, backwards, as it were." I goggled at him. "You want me to rejig my lauter backwards?" "I'm wondering if it can be done." "I don't see why not," I said, completely lost. "But why would I want to do anything like that?"
He cocked his head to one side. I could only see his mouth. He was smiling a little.
"If you use your right hand on the frets, you should be able to block chords well enough. And your crippled hand can be used to rake the strings in an unsubtle but effective way. At first, at any rate, I'm sure you will eventually be able to learn to do fairly fast picking with your left hand, using, say, a small piece of wood or horn."
The stars were spinning. The distant summits of the Grenze snapped at me like teeth. Pale as the moon, I threw my hands on either side of me and gripped handfuls of damp grass. I forced myself to breathe slow and long. "Varus tits," I whispered. He was right. You see, Father, he was right. In a few casual words, this Shillernd, this monster that I would have tried to kill last winter, that I had tried to kill only the day before, this Bonito, he'd given me back my soul. I picked up my bag and drew out my Laute, trembling like a child. It was so simple. "Thank you," I stammered, and I won't pretend I wasn't crying a bit. I started on the strings. The light wasn't good, but I could have done this in complete darkness. It's the hands that know and remember, not the eyes.
"Oh, that's not the extent of my ideas," he said, watching me work. "I can't sing like a true bonito anymore. It is difficult to admit, but inescapable nonetheless."
I shrugged and tried to sound reassuring. "If you stay around these parts and never sing to Bonito again, no one will ever be able to tell."
"You can tell," he said, and I think he threw just a little more air across his scarred membrane to make his point. His voice was like frayed silk. "And so can I. There is always at least one Bonito listening to me when I sing. Me. When I sing the way the gods intended me to sing, I want to drive my knee horns into my own ears. I'd be nimble enough to do it, you know."
He sighed.
"No, I think tonight was the last time I have sung the three." He took a long, nervous breath. "But listen to this." And as I worked the strings on my Laute, he began to sing like no other Shillernd ever consciously would, in a single voice. Just one note following the other, in a line. A perfect, soul-piercing sound that rose and fell in sequence, without words, without chords, and apparently without end, the Shillernd can breathe as they sing. He went on for a while, first giving me melodies I knew not, and then, playfully, going through a sort of medley of the songs I'd performed during my own set earlier today. He ended his demonstration using words again, with snatches of eerily beautiful, slow dirges in cordes. The very music he'd refrained from singing this afternoon, now done in a distinctly non-Shillernd fashion. Not once did he stack one note on top of another.
"That was very beautiful," I said. "It's very strange to hear a bonito sing like that. What will you do for chords?"
He chuckled. "You are not very quick, are you?" "And then the Thaler dropped, Father. No Shillernd would sing with a human, surely," I said, astonished, casually rude. "No Shillernd should sing to a human either, if it comes to that." He laughed, choosing not to be insulted. "I stepped over quite a frontier today, and I think I'm too far gone at this point to care very much." He turned to me and took the cowl off again. There was some flicker of fear behind his usual Shillernd sang-froid. "I've crossed steel with these people for 4 years, Father. I've killed them and looked into their eyes as they've tried to gore me with one of the myriad horns that stick out of every part of their bodies. I always thought I just wasn't able to decode their facial expressions well enough to see their fear. But there it was." "We are both soldiers," he said. "We have that in common, regardless of music."
"We have music too," I said. "You planned this very well, you bastard."
"I improvised well enough," he demurred.
I nodded. "Well, there we are," I said. I gestured at my half-restringed Laute. "I owe you for this, and there has never been an act like the one we'll be forming."
"No matter the goodwill on these fields tonight, I don't suppose there ever will be again," he stated with sad confidence.
He turned around and took in the extraordinary sight about us. The thousands of torches lighting an endless throng of men and women and children. People who were there to be happy and to sing together and worship unseen gods. People who slept under the western stars and had no taste for fighting. People who had listened to a Schillernd in respectful silence and had applauded him afterward. "Well," I harrumphed, "we'd better start looking for a good wizard to break my conditioning." "I do hope you will be able to hear us perform, Father. We're booked to appear before the king at the Sternenspiel in 3 months' time. Amsel is now the royal music master, if you didn't know. Not being the sort who holds a grudge, he got us the contract. I will do my best to obtain good invitations for you and yours, but I can promise nothing, I'm sure you understand. There will be a great many important people at this concert, and seating is limited. I remain your grateful son."